Chalitza.
Father
Rav. Okay, thank you very much.
You can feel free to move where they can see you. I'll sit here too.
This is the despair Chalitza show?
Yes, despair.
They both look very similar. There's been one Chalitza show that the Beit Din of America has used for every single Chalitza, I believe, that has been performed in the history of the Beit Din of America. At this point in time, I think there have been something in the range of 23 or 24 Chalitzas since the inception of the Beit Din in the 1960s. And it's the same Chalitza shoe. It's a very sturdy and reliable Chalitza shoe that's been used every single time. I also believe that Rabbi Elia Lichter, who's one of the mumchen in Yanni Chalitza, has been present at every single Chalitza that's ever been performed by the Beit Din of America. I think I've been present at every Chalitza that's been performed since 1998. There have been approximately 12 or 13, maybe even 14 Chalitzas that have been performed during this period of time, including two Chalitzas that were performed in the aftermath of the tragedy of the World Trade Center, where a number of young men, unfortunately, were killed during that attack. And two of the men, unfortunately, did not yet have any children, and they had to perform a Chalitza even after their wives were permitted to remarry based on a determination that the husbands were killed in the disaster. He didn't have remains to be able to identify their deaths, so he had to rely on other criteria that are spelled out towards the end of Maseches Yevamos as to how to have enough of a clear sense of evidence to determine that a man has died. In addition to the determination of death, in those cases where they didn't have any children and they had left a widow and a brother, there was also a necessity for the widow to go through a chalitza procedure before she could remarry. So they had a memorial ceremony at the site of Ground Zero on May 30th, I think it's the date. I think it was Memorial Day or around Memorial Day. And after the memorial ceremony, since all the relatives were in the area anyway, we arranged to have back-to-back chalitzas for the two cases of the women whose husbands had perished without children. It's interesting, there were four other cases of agunas that we dealt with in the aftermath of 9/11, where the couple only had one child, and that one child was born either in the weeks immediately prior to 9/11 or subsequent to 9/11. There was one case where the one child that the couple had was actually, it was Mamash Milvera's case, where you had to wait to find out whether there would be offspring or not, and we didn't know whether a chalitza would be needed. Because a viable child would have to be born. And in that case, a child was born in March of the subsequent year, and thank God it was a healthy baby. And actually, that child grew up not so far from where I live, and he and one of my sons actually were very good friends for a number of years until they moved out of the community. And what was also interesting is that in one of the cases, there was a child, but the child wasn't a biological child. It was an adopted child. So we know the halakha is uvene lo, ayena lo. And you have to examine that to make sure that there are no biological offspring, because sometimes there might be a child who was adopted, but that's not enough in order to exempt a woman from chalitza. And we had to explain, although it was obviously pastorally very difficult, that even though this child was somebody whom both the father and the mother had viewed it as if it was their own biological offspring, for purposes of even machalitza, it was still necessary to perform machalitza in order for the woman to remarry, since the husband did not have any biological offspring and had left a brother. So we performed the chalitza in that case as well.
Question.
Yes.
What if the husband only had a child through artificial insemination, but it was his biological
Sefer Chalitza Kehilchos assumes that a child who's born through artificial insemination would be considered to be a child for purposes of exempting the woman from having to even a chalitza. It's a little discussion and Chazru Avu in the Chalitza Chokek in the Beis Shmuel whether a person can satisfy through a child born through artificial insemination the mitzvah of Chazru Avu. I think the Beis Shmuel is not a yes. Based on various sources, Midrashic and otherwise. But there is some discussion and deliberation. I think in the Chazal is a topic, so there is some discussion and deliberation about it. But the Sefer Chalitza Kehilchos quotes a whole string of poskim, and it comes to the conclusion. It says, Vein Mikomakom, right? Vein Ayenala, Vein Mikomakom. So he says, so here we're inclined to follow those, since there are enough views, they consider it to be a child, so what we would consider it to be a child is
part of the Ayana love, yeah, is making sure that it's not artificial insemination from a donor.
Yeah. Right. Now, of course, it would only work if it's, as somebody Lily points out, if it's artificial insemination through the father and not through a third party. Through a third party, obviously, that wouldn't work at all. And there was a whole discussion of Shaul Yisraeli had about a child born through artificial insemination of the husband after the husband dies. So the husband dies, but he left some zera in a bank. And now the wife accesses the zera 2 years after he died and has a child. So is that child patur miyubim retroactively at this point in time, since she's now going forward? At this point in time, now she has a child. Do we say that it has to happen before the end of the lifetime of the father? So Shaul Yisraeli assumes that it wouldn't work. He assumes that it has to be before the, based on Noda Yehuda, he says that he thinks it would, and other considerations, he thinks it would have to work. Would have to be born, or at least the child would have to be conceived before the father dies. And Oda Yehuda entertained the notion that maybe if the child was conceived and not fertilized, that it was within the 3 days that it sometimes takes for a child, for a fetus to be fertilized in the mother's womb, that's the time in which the zera has to be niklat. And the zera is there, but it's not niklat yet, and then you have a child who's born, 9 months and 3 days later, so he entertains the possibility that also wouldn't exempt from Yibum or Chalitza. He says he's not sure he would rely upon this, and in his case, which was a case of a child who was born, I think, 9.5 months after the father died, he works with the assumption that it was probably Nikla right away, and it was just a long pregnancy, so he doesn't have to deal with this far. Halacha Lamaisa said that it could be determined that in fact the child, the fertilization of the child didn't take place until after the husband died. So he thinks that in fact that wouldn't pass in the human bakalitza. So Shaul Yisraeli goes to the bank with this, and he says he thinks that's rather than other view, then applies it to this type of situation. He applies also to Rachel Hagar Noam. He says, you know, the Gemara says that if there were her children alive at the time and they die afterwards, and she marries, so because of Terachea Dafenom, just because they died, we don't say that it turns out that she's retroactively obligated in Yigum Machalitza. So he applies it in this case, Terachea Dafenom, if there are no children and she marries the brother-in-law and does Yibum, so it would be the violation of Terachea Dafenom, not to say that she wasn't allowed to Yibum Machalitza the child is born afterwards. So I saw in the state of Machalitza Kehilmasa, he quotes of Nassim Gestetner, I think he has a shuv, long shuv on this subject, where he basically comes out in the opposite direction. He thinks that, says, lo yimachah shmo miyisrael, so this is not mikoy shmo, this is once a child is born from this this father's era. So even if it happened 5 years later, because he had left some zera, now she has a child through artificial insemination, he thinks that there's a very strong argument that this would exempt from even machalitza. In terms of Terachea Dafenom, this is probably the best Dafenom, because we don't do a Yibum Bisman, is that the more likely scenario is that you could have a situation in which there's a brother-in-law refuses to do Chalitza, and this is a way in which the wife, the widow, is able to get out of it by having a child through artificial insemination. So at least according to him, it's more Terachea Dafenom, one could argue that, you'll see that she'll be able to save herself and then go on with her life by having a child. But those are all very unusual type cases. But Inachinami. There are different, you know, clarifications that have to be made. There are a lot of reports, a lot of cases that the post can talk about where the right questions weren't asked. Where the case, I think, with the Rabbanut in Israel, where they asked the woman if she had any children, and she said, yes, of course we had children, and she didn't report that she meant they only had adopted children. They had an adopted child, so they let her remarry without chalitza, and then it was discovered subsequently that it was only an adopted child. The question was whether she should be allowed afterwards, when they corrected the situation, to stay with the second husband or not. Is this a case where the normal halacha is that she's not allowed to stay with the person that she married, the be'isr, but if it's a big onus, of Moshe Singer, it's a big onus, so then there was a horah, there was a mistaken horah, then there's room to be made. So the question was this a mistaken horah, or was this a case where the woman misled the Bezdin? That's the Chakira in the Sefer Chalitza Kehilchasa. The Machaber of the Sefer has a tshuva by a group of rabbanim that he posed the question to, who remain unnamed in the Sefer, writes this beautiful tshuva about why she should be allowed to remain with the second husband, and he writes that he completely disagrees and thinks that they're wrong, that she misled the Bezdin, and it's not a case of mistaken horah, and she shouldn't be allowed to stay with the second husband. So you have cases like this. There was another case, one of the cases Moshe talks about. It was a case where the woman was there that the rabbi asked the wrong question. He said, do you have any children? So the woman said, sure. Turned out, yeah, the woman had a child from a prior marriage, but it wasn't from that husband. So the rabbi went ahead and was Masada Kiddushin, and they ended up being married, and it turned out that the rabbi had made an egregious error. She didn't ask the right question. He didn't say, did your husband have any children? So really, she was Chayevis B'chalitz V'yilum. So again, they corrected it. That's one of the cases where Rav Moshe is Mekel because of the mistaken Hora. Under those circumstances, he allowed her to stay with a second husband. So those are just some of the cases we deal with. These are real-life cases. I went to a Sheva B'chus a couple of years ago in which I didn't know the people at all. Sometimes you get invited because you know your neighbors invite you to a Sheva B'chus. They know the people. They want you to come and fill out the minyan. They wanted me to say a few words. So I didn't. I knew the family, but I didn't know. I knew the family, the parents of the parents of the kala. I knew the parents of the kala not that well. I knew them. I was acquainted with them. So I was invited to the Sheva B'chus, and the chassan came over to me at the beginning of the Sheva B'chus, and he said, "Do you recognize me? Do you know who I am?" I felt very bad because I didn't recognize him, by the way. I said, what year are you in? I'm not sure, but he said, no, I don't go to your yeshiva, but I met you about 10 years ago. It turned out he was a teenager at the time, and he was one of the people who had come into our Besdin. He was one of the brothers-in-law. He had come into our Besdin. This was one of the tragic cases of the World Trade Center where somebody had died and had left a widow without children and a brother, and he was the brother who came in to do the chalitza. And I had the schus of not only but being able to participate in the simple of his nisuin 10 years later, and being able to speak at his Sheva B'chus and to talk about what a wonderful fellow he was, because he did this very important mitzvah.
That was the Talmud of our yeshiva, am I correct?
I think we had this.
That was Talmud of our yeshiva. I shouldn't think it's related to the yeshiva as well as to the best. So I have this. The identity correct that the person who was also a Moresh HaKolel alumnus, so his I think that his brother was the one who as the rabbi has described.
Yes.
Why is it that are there even situations where the family is from but the brother still doesn't want to do his mitzvah? Like why are there so many situations that people don't want to do
this? Sometimes there aren't very close relations between different families. You know, sometimes people don't get along with their in-laws so well. Sometimes there's a lot of tension. Sometimes maybe the wife and her husband's family didn't get along that well. These are nice and clear. You can have strong, very fine marriages where one spouse doesn't really get along that well with the family of the other spouse. Especially after they've experienced such a terrible tragedy that their child has died. They might not necessarily be more warmly inclined towards their former relative. So there are situations where sometimes you have these tensions. We had a case this past year.
Fighting over money.
There was sometimes they're fighting over money. Where's the money from the estate going to go? These are the types of situations that were discussed in the Gemara and are still real-life realities nowadays. We had this past year a case where the deceased husband's family really didn't get along with the sister-in-law, and there was a lot of tension about performing the chalitza. It happened that there were a few brothers, and I pointed out at one point that one of the brothers was single and was kind of in the parsha of getting married. There's a halakha that if somebody, there's a zika, and there's a requirement that there's a sister-in-law and a yavama in the picture, and somebody has to do yivam b'chalitza. It's not done yet. Then any particular brother who has the potential of doing the yivam b'chalitza is not yet married. He's not allowed to get married. So if he's already engaged, then he's allowed to get married. That's how it's brought down by the Ramada halacha. But if he's not yet engaged, he's not allowed to get married. So therefore, it would hold him up. So I don't know what finally was machuya the situation. But shortly after we had that discussion, somehow the chalitza happened.
And the case we had in the Pesach Tshuva, the guy wanted money. So he duped him. So he was a left, a right. That goes back for hundreds of years, this kind of situation.
Chalitza muta, you can pull off. You can't compel a chalitza, but...
So there's a fellow who did a chalitza with his right foot. He said it wasn't a lefty, but he was a lefty. And then he said, I did it in order to make sure that she gave money for when she got engaged, for the dunya, to be able to split the money.
The actual shlomo is vidya, but a right foot always works even for a left footy, but that's when it's smaller. It's always a very complicated situation. Right. Yeah,
certain of these questions like have certain time frames, like a Yerusha question takes a certain time frame for it to come into play, where the parties have are at issue. So what's the time frame for getting to Felisa? Like, how ordinarily, how quick could you get?
So this is how. So when a man dies, so first of all, Felisa can't be done for 90 days. You have to have a 90-day waiting period to determine whether or not the woman is pregnant.
Right.
And that's a low blow. Even if for a fact, you got to wait 90 days. And there's even a question. The Ramah seems to bring down that Felisa is done within the first 90 days. It's a Felisa psula. The Gemara is not master that way, but he seems to bring that it's a Felisa psula. It's a very serious matter. There are contemporary post-gim, very dire situations where the brother-in-law is willing to do it, but you're afraid he's going to run away if you don't do it right away. We're make over Shasta Kagodol to do it within 90 days. It's clear that she's not pregnant, and obviously she doesn't get married to anybody else until afterwards. And even then, if you can redo it after the 90 days, it's appropriate to try to redo it. But we had a situation like that where Chalitza was presented to us. The husband had just died, and they knew there was a father-in-law, and they thought they'd be able to get him right away, but they were afraid they would lose him if they didn't do it right away. So one of the rabbis in New Jersey called me up, can you do the chalitza within the first 90 days? So I said that it's a halacha neramah, it's considered a chalitza psula, so we don't want to mess with that. Chalitza psula, you have to be close to kol ha'achim, all the brothers who do chalitza, there are multiple brothers. You know, we don't want to mess with that type of a situation. So we waited until the first possible moment. The halacha is you wait 90 days plus the day of death, plus the date of the chalitza. So it's like a day 92. If you're counting day one, the day of death, so then on day 92, that's the first day you'll have to do a chalitza. And they scheduled it such. It happened that day 92, in this case, came out on a Sunday. The husband was in Philadelphia, so he traveled to Philadelphia. We did the chalitza together with the Philadelphia Bezdin. And somehow, even later that week, when it worked, the fellow was going away. This was the only day he could do it. It was a mamish day 92. As I said, you make it day 94, day 95, I'll be able to sleep at night. Maybe day 92, so I gotta be worried. I didn't count correctly. So I must have counted the calendar 100 times. Literally, before we did the chalitza, I must have counted.
Times.
Yeah, right? And I think even at the chalitza itself, I sat down with the rest of the Bez, and I said, let's all count together. Here's the calendar. We're all going to count together, make sure we got the count right. It's exactly on the 92nd day. So that's the earliest day that you can do the chalitza is on day 92. Just to make sure that you've passed the period of time in which there's a possibility that the woman may have been pregnant. But typically, how soon does it happen? Pastorally, it's not necessarily something to bring up at the Shiva.
But is there, ideally, if you try to work to an early target, because problems tend to exacerbate them once they start,
course,
once they roll.
Of course, you do it as soon as possible, as soon as the parties know about it and they're psychologically prepared for it and they're willing to do it. So just like a get, you don't put off for 1 second. One of the lessons you learn is that you never put off a get. Even if the parties agree at 3 in the morning to the get, you do the get at 3 in the morning.
Especially.
That and house deals. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
100%. You gotta do it. So the same thing with a chalitza. As soon as you know the party, it's like there's a halacha that you're not supposed to do a chalitza on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov unless it's a Shas of Chag. So you've done a couple of times. So we've done get the chalitza.
Erev Rosh Hashanah this year.
Erev Shabbos. We did a chalitza on Erev Rosh Hashanah. We did a chalitza. Because it was a Shas of Chag. You're worried that if you lose the opportunity, you may not be able to do it. So, like with Hankin writes, and now he's all given a shasa taket. So, chalitzas also, you don't put it off when you have an opportunity to do a chalitza. We've done two chalitzas in the yeshiva this year, next door, in the room next door. We did two chalitzas this year that were learning Yivamas. Neither were cases where the parties necessarily were looking for a grand pomp and ceremony and a large audience watching the chalitza. So, we didn't put up signs and invite the entire yeshiva. It used to be, I remember when Rav Melech Shechter was doing chalitza, so when I was a talmid in the yeshiva, so he once did a chalitza, where family the parties were comfortable with all the talmidim coming and watching. I think that if I'm not mistaken, it was on the fifth floor of first hall. We went up to the fifth floor of first hall, and everybody gathered together, and we watched the chalitza. That was my first shimush, the chalitza. I saw the way that Rav Melech Shechter is going to take a type of bracha. Performed a chalitza, so I was able to watch the way he did. The one thing I remember that stuck out in my mind was how he was testing that the brother-in-law was a right footy. So he make sure he has to be a right footy, so you know that you're putting the shoe on the right foot. That you should put it on, his stronger foot. It's supposed to be the right foot, but the right foot has to be right.
So he asked him to kick a chair. Right, kick the chair like this. So every single time we do a chalitza, so I always adopt that that particular technique. They asked the fellow to kick a chair. So we're able to know that he's definitely a right footy. I mean, there are other ways of knowing too, which foot he puts out first. But this is brought down the halacha. One of the ways that you test is that you ask him to kick something. Most people in the world, even if they're not right-handed, they're right-footed. So anyway, we had the chalitza in that on the fifth floor of first hall. It says you're supposed to have it in some public makom. Also, you've been to hashara. So it's supposed to go up.
Makom gavah.
To a makom gavah. So you put it on a makom. It's supposed to be a makom gavah, makom pashu. So we've just moved it over the fifth floor of first hall to the fifth floor of block. So now we do it in the fifth floor of block. We do it in the official room that we've designated as the bezdin room. And it has to be, since we say it has to be a makom, it has to be a hashar. It's a specific makom, so you could be a makom beforehand. So the day before the chalitza takes place, everyone sits around, the dayanim sit around. There are three main dayanim for a chalitza, then there are two nosafim. There are three main dayanim. The three dayanim sit at a table like this, and then you have a side table on the side, and then the two nosafim sit on the side to show that they're not the main dayanim. So the three main dayanim go to be koveya makom, go to establish that this is going to be the place where the chalitza is going to take place tomorrow. And they say, we're doing the chalitza, then you set up the chairs and you set up the tables in just the way that you want them. You say, okay, this is the place we're going to do the chalitza tomorrow for so-and-so who is the brother of so-and-so who's going to do chalitza for his sister-in-law so-and-so. So you mention all the parties. And then our minhag always at the Bezdin of America is to seclude the room. That was our Kabbalah. Once you kovei the makom, so you seclude the makom. There should be this specific makom. You put a sign in the door saying this makom is reserved for this particular purpose. We don't use it for anything else. Over the course of the next day, we kovei the makom. And then the next day, after you kovei the makom, so then the parties come into the chalitza. So we had two cases this year in which we did it. It's supposed to be prepirsum. Supposed to be in front of a fair number of people. So Ramal Shechter did it, they hit the mitzvah, the piyosim that he brought, all the Tamidei HaYeshiva to watch the chalitza. But what's the idea of the piyosim? It's either to show that everyone should know that she's a suva l'kahuna, or that she's mutarasli nasta, she went to a chalitza, and the stam piyosim is at least 10 people. So we always make sure to have at least 10 people. We have 10 men, we have the three dayanim and the two nosafim is 5. Then you have 2 aidim, then 7, then you have usually somebody who comes along to kind of help out, that's 8, and usually you just kind of have some say you can count the yavam and the yavama too. But then usually we have a 5 or so other tamidim, so it comes out, and other guests, sometimes flush of rabbanim, come because they want to watch a chalitza. So you end up with 15, 16, 17, whatever, something in that range. That's what we had. We did one on Erev Rosh Hashanah, as we mentioned, and we did one on New Year's Day. I remember what the Eve did, that was the other one. Yes, there aren't that many people around, so if they were looking for privacy, they had to, yeah.
It's supposed to be like public, isn't like the room over here like kind of like private? It's like you're like in first hall, that's like...
Yeah, but it's a chashiva place. It's the official makom bezdin, so that gives it a chashiva. So it's a makom chashiva, yeah.
I thought the two nosafim were supposed to be for like the farsi.
Yes,
so why the extra? I thought, because
like,
I thought the Gemara specifically said
that
those two are done for
five. Yeah, but once you have piyosim, so stop piyosim is at least 10. I think it'll be kosher, but it's supposed to have 10.
Also,
it's supposed to have 10 people. That's the minute. That will be 10 people. Yeah.
Why would the woman be that minute, even with five same? She was like the person who's trying to be mucked here.
No, no question. You have all these other people who are there, so they're able to be five same.
No, but I'm saying it's for the Obama should be included in part of the piercing. I mean, like, for her to start telling other people, like, if she's suddenly in the terrorist, so then, like, wouldn't that not work? Like, she's like, no, yeah, no.
Right, but the question is, how many people do you need to be? You're asking the question, why should she be included?
She should be included.
Okay, so. The Yarko Shokhan mentions that maybe Yavama could be included. Again, the number 10 is not necessarily magical for the work halakha. That's what's mentioned. But we're not summing on that anyway. We have 10 separate individual, unrelated people who are always present whenever we do a chalitza. But you don't need, strictly speaking, even if even in terms of accomplishing the piercing, you don't need more than that. Remember when we did the chalitza in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Bezdin, Aaron Felder was there, and Rav Dov Aaron Grisman. So they actually did have a lot of people in the room. So it was a large room of because in Philadelphia it was even more of a novelty to have a chalitza. So they had even more people who were present. Yeah.
Does it undermine? I didn't. I,
And does it undermine the kvias of the maklum if it's the form, the locational form is used in the course of the day? I mean, does it really, place really have to be secured and not unused?
No, it's not brought down. And from what I could tell, in my own personal research, I haven't found it brought down in Shulchan Aruch or in any of the classical
sort
of
things.
You know, you inherit certain misoras, certain traditions from the best institutions. You have to take your misoras very, very seriously. The August institution, where you find, you know, posting over the years. So that was one of our traditions, that to seclude the room. Somebody finds some aramachal, we're very happy. I actually don't know a specific aramachal. You can figure out misora. Yeah.
Were there any specific issues when either Ben or at what you talking with the Rakaka? Where like she spit and he didn't see, or there was too was bloody out, like whatever.
So it's supposed to evoke a nearest lay nine, that sometimes is an issue, but if you see it when it leaves him out and when it's already in the vicinity in which it's in front of the ovum, even if it then withers away in the air, but it was in front of him when she spit down. Let's say that she's very short and he's very tall, so whenever she spits automatically, it's in his vicinity, and you see it when it comes out of her mouth, so the halacha is, and even if you don't see any of the karka, it's okay. It's interesting, Rashi al-Hakumish says explicitly you should go both, it should go to the karka. So we're careful there. So we actually have the rope go down on the karka. We don't have anything intervening between the karka. We have it go directly on the karka.
For the Pearson, could you turn on the video camera in that room over there and broadcast it live?
Broadcast it live? I don't know if that's what we mean by Pearson. Because in the traditional sense, those who are present. I don't think that we ask that people have to, you know, reenact and relive the experience by having it available for the whole world to watch their Chalitza, right. Wedding is something that you want to celebrate. 25th anniversary, you watch the wedding again. You want to do it, and you want it to work and be effective, and you want to move on. Same thing, we don't televise gifting.
Well, the qualified person, could you have some virtual presence, other than some people who were Skyping and watching it? Would they qualify for your meeting?
I don't know that anyone has written on the subject. I wouldn't think that they should be there physically. Just like you can't have Adam Skyping in, you have Adam physically present. You say, you invite someone to be an AT, well, I can't make it, but I'll be an AT by Skype. It doesn't work. I think the Adam is supposed to be physically there.
Are there any qualifications with the Adam and Sing Moscana that we assume are just anyone
can
do it?
The Dayan is interesting because you have to be very careful. It says, Nikrashmo Bi Yisrael. So the Gemara in Yibam says Bi Yisrael means that they have to be born Jewish. So one of the questions that I ask, I have kind of my own internal checklist. When we do this, I turn around to the Dayanim and I say, is everybody here Jewish from by birth? The Gemara says, not only do they have to be Jewish by birth, the parents have to be Jewish by birth. So one of the questions I ask is everybody? You can have somebody, so Chashur Rav, and maybe they had a parent who was a Ger. So I say, is everybody, or maybe somebody in the family, have to do a Gia Vakumba, very fine family, but things happen. So I make sure, because a chalitza, that could create a chalitza psula, be terrible. So we ask, is everybody, first of all, you ask that nobody is related to Yom Yibama, nobody's related to each other, and you also ask, is everybody here Jewish from birth, and were their parents Jewish from birth? Usually I know the answer to that question, but in order to educate the Talmidim, come for the chalitza, so I make sure I ask that question, so that it's understood that this is something that you really have to be mevarer with respect to Dayan. Otherwise that can create an absolute psula. There are other things too. They say that specifically with respect to chalitza, you shouldn't take the three dayanim. Not the no suffering, but the three dayanim. You shouldn't take scar for the chalitza. Also, is a various halachas that you have to be cognizant of with respect to the dayanim to make sure that you don't create any potential issues that the chalitza should be without any pukim whatsoever. So you have to be kovea that the 90 days have passed from when the person died. Be kovea that there were no children, even if they had children, but the children died, Rahman al-Islam, that also requires you and Machalitza. The children died before the husband's death, so that also requires you and Machalitza. That's also an area where people sometimes make mistakes, not to realize that the children have to not only be born, but they have to still be alive. Then you have to be kovea that the brother is really the brother from the same father. And if three brothers are the same fathers, that's also a question you have to ask. It is the halacha is that you're supposed to have the oldest brother to the chalitza, according to the mashmals of the psukim. the way that they're interpreted. However, it's not me'akev. So if the oldest brother is not available for whatever reason, the chalitza is 100% kosher, not 95%, 99%. It's a 100% kosher if it's done by any of the brothers. So even if it's not the oldest brother, if it's easier to do it, you can do it in a more timely fashion with a younger brother, that's also okay. It's a little bit of a discussion that the older brother is married and the younger brother is not married, so maybe l'chatchila you should have a younger brother because the Tanya Rabbeinu Gershom makes the older brother maybe not a l'chatchila anymore. That's a little bit of a din. I don't know that there's a definitive psak on that question, but that's another reason why there is room to be made if the older brother is not available and he's married to a younger brother. But in any event, you could use any one of the brothers. One question that almost never comes up is to make sure that it was a that they were ba'olam, olamo, and that was not shalom ba'olamo. That you have to ascertain that this is a brother who is not born after the brother died. So given that you're doing at least a few months later, and you have to have a gedolim, so that question is generally not germane. You have to ascertain that they're gedolim, and you have to ascertain through shanim misimanim. It's supposed to That's a question sometimes exactly how this man is there. There are different shitas of how you ascertain shanim misimanim of this man is there. Assuming that everything is properly ascertained, so you bring them to do the chalitza. We have at the Beis Din of America, there's a chalitza script, so that the parties are given a script which tells them everything that they're supposed to say and everything that they're supposed to do. There are a bunch of statements. There are three parts of the chalitza. There's the kriya, the psukim that have to be said, the statements that have to be said by the yavam and the yavama. They have to be said b'lashon hakodesh, which says kafa. Kafa is likuba, there has to be dafka b'lashon hakodesh. And then there's the chalitza, the actual removal by the yavama of the shoe from the yavam. And then there's the rakika, there's the spinning. And the only part, the only one of these three, which is really me'akev, is the chalitza, the removal of the shoe. The other two are not me'akev. The only thing that's completely me'akev is the removal of the shoe. But we do all parts of it. First he starts, she starts off with a statement in which she says that he is my, I'll read the script, me'en yavami, lakim sheim l'achiv b'Yisrael, bo'aba yavmi. And then he says, lo chapasti l'kachta, that I don't want to take her. And then after that, you have the removal of the shoe by the yavam from the yavama. She removes the shoe from the yavam, and then you have the rakika. And then she says the final statement: "Kacha yeselish shelo yemes beis aviv, mikrash mamar yisrael ta beis kolutzenal." And everybody present says beis kolutzenal, kolutzenal, kolutzenal three times. And that's the basic contour of the ceremony. It's exactly the way that it is outlined in the Torah. You can learn all of Hilchos Chalitza pretty much by just reading the parsha in the Torah. That gives you the entire script. It gives you the entire ceremony. We have a lot of other questions, and you're not doing this under duress and so forth. Things that you have to ascertain, you didn't make any modah, which you told somebody you're doing it under duress. Of course, you have to ask all of those questions. But that's really the main part of the ceremony. But what's very, very important is the chalitza na'alo mi'avaglo. That's it. That's the interest. You want to do that right. The chalitza na'alo mi'avaglo. She has to take the shoe from off of his foot. So na'alo, that's a big deal. Na'alo, you have to make sure you have a shoe. That's a pasha. You go to a shoe store and buy a shoe. It has to be a Torah endorsed na'al. It has to fit the description halakhically of what a na'al is supposed to be. And there's a big discussion in the Gemara, as I'm sure you learned, that whether you use a minnow, whether you use a sandal. And they recommend it against a minnow because you can have a minnow merufat, you can have a slightly torn, minnow, so really a sandal is preferable, but we kind of lost the ability to know how to make a sandal. So we use a minnow. So this is a minnow, really. But it's a minnow that has aspects of a sandal. So we know that a sandal has an or kosher, that it has very hard leather. So this is also made out of or hard leather. You have to make it out of leather because we know that Pasuk in Yechezke says, it says, Ben Alech Tachash. That Nile is associated with Tachash. Tachash is a type of animal that has the skin is a leather skin. It's a leather hide. So we see from here that Nile requires a leather hide. And we know from Rabbeinu Tam that whenever you require something from an animal, right? So it has to be a kosher animal. So it's made from a kosher animal. And we're also told that a sandal has a heel. So it has to have a heel. It has to have a heel properly. And we also know that a sandal has other things that the Gemara, I think on Daf Kuf Beis, talks about. It has to have shinsi. It has to have clasps. So you have three clasps. This is partially based on the Gemara, partially based on the way that the shoe is described in the Mishnayos and Kalim Perach above. So we have three of them. Really, you could have had two, but whatever. The minhag has been to have three shinsi, which is also called kumarta. And then there's misna. And the Gemara also says that in order to have a chalitza maliyasa, you have to have misna, which are the straps. That's the ritzuas. The ritzuas are the straps. So those are the elements, those are the major elements of the shul. Then we're told that it has to be me'al aglo, lo me'al demal. It can't be from on top of on top. So there are various chumras that are observed on that basis. One is that his foot has to be completely clean, so that so the shoe is going directly on the foot and not on the chatzitzos that are on his foot. So one of the things we do is we call the brother-in-law a day beforehand, and we say, please make sure to clip your toenails, and please make sure to wash your foot. And then one of the tasks that I've assumed over the years, when we do a chalitza, is to examine the foot, and to take away little strands, the little strings, and everything, right before we put the shoe on his foot. Also, there's been maglo. Maglo means his foot. Nalo. His foot, we know, he can't have a shliach. But Nalo, it's about so Nalo, it has to be his shoe. So what does it mean, it has to be his shoe? So I might have thought that means that it has to be his shoe that he owns. So we worry about that interpretation, though that's not really the accepted interpretation. So we give him the shoe as a matana. But technically, even if it's not his shoe, the chalitza still works. The main meaning of Na'alo means that it has to fit his foot. It has to be a shoe that fits. If the shoe fits, then you can wear it. But otherwise, it's not. Otherwise, the chalitza doesn't work. It'd be a chalitza psula. If the shoe is either too small or the shoe is too big, so that he couldn't even walk in the shoe bikoshi, then it's no good. If the shoe's a little bit big, and he can walk in it, and you see that he's able to walk in it, but it's more comfortable when you tie it with the clasps and with the straps. So that's okay. That's considered to be kosher. If it doesn't fit him at all, so then the chalitza doesn't work. So therefore, when you manufacture chalitza shoes, you manufacture a size which can fit somebody who's a size 12. But at the same time, even if somebody's a size 8, it's not going to be too big for
them. Who's size 12? Wait, you want to try on this?
That's actually my question. I was going to follow is just with regarding sensitivity to doing these things. I understand there's an infinite shoe, but you sort of anticipated my question. Because, for example, if a young man said he's going to try on here, like, my gut reaction was.
I tell people, I can try it. I don't have any brothers, so I'm okay with
Rabbi Reese has no brothers, and unfortunately his father passed away, so there's no possibility of him ever having even a chalitza. Can't be.
Yeah.
So we'll let him put it, but he doesn't have size 12.
No, I'm a size 9 and a half, actually.
So I'm just being
but for those who want to know my shoe size, so
whatever. You only want to know it, you find it.
The back of the shoe was too small.
This is the back of the
shoe.
It's roughly, I think that the other shoe might be a tiny bit larger than this shoe. But this is sort of one of the things that you have to determine. So therefore, when you put the shoe on the foot, first you make sure that the foot doesn't have any chatzitzos, and you have to make sure that there's no separation, because this halacha, me'al v'lo me'al d'mal. One of the other ramifications of me'al v'lo me'al d'mal is that if it is too far up, if it's, me'al v'lo, a little bit above the foot, in sort of the shin bone area, which is right above the ankle, so that's okay. If the shoe goes into that area, if the straps go into that area, but if they go above the knee, that's already problematic. In fact, I think Yerushalmi indicates that even if just the ritzuos go above the knee, that's already problematic. So even though there's a little bit of discussion when that's really true with respect to the ritzuos, we don't take any chances. And nothing goes above the knee, and everything has to be below the knee. So what we do is, I'll just show you, I'll take off my shoe. And take off the shoe, take off the sole. So we fold up the pants, so the pants are folded up above the knee. So we know that the straps can go up until this area, but they can't go past this area of right above the foot. So that they're not going to be made. And you also have to make sure that there's no sock, because if you have a sock, so it's not chasan alo me'al raglo. Besides the fact that the shoe would then be me'al d'mal, but the chalitza na'alo me'al raglo is not going to work, because when she takes off the chalitza shoe, it has to just be from the foot, and not that there's still a sock and it's going to still be there. And if she then takes off the sock, it doesn't do anything, because it's chalitza na'alo me'al raglo, and not chalitza, sacko me'al raglo. So therefore, that's not going to be good enough. So you make sure that he takes off the sock. All that you're dealing with is basically, no, I'm fine. All that you're dealing with basically is the foot itself, and you're doing it in that fashion. Now, one of the most other very, very important aspects of doing the chalitza correctly called Tzav. She's the one, this is the chalitza. She is the one. Extremely important. He's not allowed to help out with the chalitza because he has to, and that's one of the things we say 100 times when we do the chalitza, is that he has to remain absolutely 100% passive throughout the entire chalitza procedure. It's something that she has to do entirely. That's why we say it's halacha, and mitzvah say the kari, that you're supposed to stick your foot. He's supposed to stick his foot very, very hard into the ground. Why is this halacha, tzarchah, mitzvah say the kari? So the Yom HaShulchan explains so that she'll be forced to kind of raise his foot and then take off the shoe, because otherwise the taking off of the shoe is not as recognizable if he's the one who's kind of like dangling his foot in the air, so it kind of like looks like he's participating more in the process. So therefore, we require that he sticks his foot in the ground. She has to do all the work, both in terms of untying the straps and of lifting up his foot and of taking off the shoe. She has to do all of it, and even though sometimes it's very difficult, we say that she has to remain, he has to remain absolutely passive, and she has to be the one who remains the one who does the entire thing. Yes?
Both parties have to remain standing.
It's brought up. We have one part that says, V'yamar v'yamar l'chafas l'kaptav. It's brought down that the Mida is, they're both supposed to stand. I think Yishami describes that way. They're both supposed to stand. She's not even supposed to bend down so that her knees would touch the ground. So when she goes and she takes off the shoe, she's supposed to remain still in a standing position where her knees do not go to the point where she's bending down to the ground with her knees. I had a little bit of a discussion with a chalitza within Philadelphia with one of the dayanim as to whether that means that she can't bend herself at all. One of the dayanim was taking the position that she has to kind of like go like this. She can't bend her knees at all. So I thought not so. I said, I don't think that was not, that wasn't my understanding. So that's very, very, now what if for whatever reason they're very old and they're very frail and they just can't stand, so still caution. That's not legal. The standing is not, it's not legal. But what's also not legal, which is very important for people to know, is that we ask him if he's a right footed. We also ask her if she's right handed or left handed. If she's left handed, then we have to do the chalitza with her left hand as opposed to her right hand. But really, that's not miyakev. Well, halachically, if she does the chalitza with her left hand, it's still a chalitza. As long as she's the one, the chaltzah, she's the one who's doing it, it doesn't matter at the end of the day, even if she does it with her teeth. Let's say she doesn't have hands to do it with, and she does it with her teeth. That would also be a chalitza. So it's, a much more important inquiry to ascertain that he's a right footy than it is to ascertain, you know, whether she's right-handed or left-handed. And as I said, Baruch Hashem, I have not had a case in which the man ended up being a left footy. We give him plenty of opportunities to demonstrate that he's a right footy. You know, he can walk pretty straight with his right foot, kick the table. He's never done anything wrong. In any other case, he's done everything he was supposed to do with his right foot. So there's no that the chalitza shoe is playing the right foot. And you should know that one of the things that I do in a chalitza as well, various things I put on the checklist over the years. One of the things I do is as I'm putting the shoe on his foot, you know, you face people in various ways. You know, your right is somebody else's left. You know, as you're facing them, and your left is their right, and whatever. So I make sure to stop before we actually do the chalitza, and I stand there and I look at everybody, and I hold up the foot so everybody from whatever vantage point they're on can look at which foot it is, and I say, this is the right foot. Everybody, you know, confirm this is in fact the right foot. I don't want to take any chances with anything. Yeah.
Did you ever have to bleed some soon?
We hope not.
Do they have two shoes in case it's a lefty or
some places they have two shoes. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that the shoes are made in such a way that he wonders like why the right shoe couldn't be used for the left foot or the left shoe for the right foot. So he ends up saying that sometimes there's like a little bit of they do it with a little bit of a slant. And
says,
I guess it's a very, very little slant. So he says I leave it to the shoemakers to figure out how to make it in a way that they know how to make a right foot or a right shoe or a left shoe. But in some places, just for those situations, they'll have a left foot. I think most part they did. First of all, many places they don't have a chalitza shoe altogether, so we sometimes get an inquiry, do we have an extra chalitza shoe to lend out? But I doubt that there are too many places that have a specific shoe set aside for a left footy. It generally doesn't come up. There's even a shita that says that if let's say a man has his right foot cut off on the bottom, so then there's even a shita that says that you can't use the left foot. Then the halakha, what do we do? Since there's a possibility that it has to be dafka,
doctor the right foot, even if he's a left footy. So you do it with both feet. You put the right shoe on the right foot, and you put the left shoe on the left foot if the person's a left footy. And then the woman is supposed to take off both shoes at the same time. So again, we haven't had a situation in which that has come up. But it's a very complicated situation. Some say that if he doesn't have a right foot, he can't do a chalitza altogether. Such a sheepman. It's complicated. Yeah.
Has the husband ever been left-handed?
The husband's left-handed.
The rubber.
No, we've never had a case where the husband was a left footed. It hasn't come up. If it does come up, then you have a serious issue because then you really have to have two covered issues.
You mean the wife left-handed?
No, where the brother, the Yavam, was a left-handed right-footed.
I wouldn't know if he's left-handed or not, unless he happens to mention it in passing. I mean, if he volunteers the information.
Probably
so.
If he says he's left-handed, we check more carefully to make sure that he's right-footed. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it's even possible.
It's very, very possible.
Statistics.
It's based on
the statistics
again. If the Torah doesn't say take it off from his right foot, but it says abod magloa yemanis with respect to a mitzvah, so we assume that stam regel is a right foot. That's the assumption. So it's complicated. If he turns out to be a left foot. Yeah, assuming he's a right foot. So she has to do the entire act of taking it off. He has to make sure to put. Now what we have him do. Is I'll go through the motions of putting on the chalitza shoe. So the chalitza shoe. Yep. So you had a question?
Can I take a picture of just leg down while you're putting on shoes? I get a lot of different photos of it. Do you mind? Or is it? I don't.
Oh, you don't have a question. Okay, fine. So here we have.
Can you help us?
What? No, normally.
You're the other one puts it on every night.
Yeah,
you want to sit?
Alright, so here, that's okay. So what we do is we put it on with, first of all, you have to walk a little bit, just to make sure that it fits. This is also done for Kenyan purposes. This is the way, one of the ways when she's caught in this shoe. We have to do a hug bus, but it's also brought down here to walk for that purpose as well. And then when she takes off of the shoe, so she takes off the clasps one at a time, the bottom one and the middle one, and then the first one. So Seva Chalitza Chil Kilkosoi brings down to also tie it that way. So for the reason why it should be tied in this order, so he explains, because this is the derech which is normally done. So I don't know in what vicinity this type of thing is normally done altogether, but I guess in those places where it's normally done, this is how it's normally done.
It's just a knot and a hook.
Watch it.
So those
this
are
is just
classes,
a class,
okay?
So
those are what we call the shits, okay? This is the Kumarta. Now, what's also important, they have in between each one, as you can see in the back of the shoe, these open spaces. The open spaces are called begimos, okay? Begimos enable you to put the straps directly me'al raglo, okay? That's one of the advantages. So even if the straps are not me'al demal, they're going directly on the foot, but because we have a problem minam rufa, it's also important to cover that area completely. So we cover that area by having the mitzvahs go through into that area. And goes in the front as well. And you have it down through the second begimah. And then once again in the front. Okay. And then you have it. What?
No, usually my recess it.
I do it.
He happens to be playing both roles now. He's tying it and he's using his foot. Usually he's tying it to someone else's foot.
So okay, and then we do
watch
one
this.
More time.
Yeah, but sure. There's no third begima, right?
What?
We are going to get on the joke. We spoke about this.
Right. And then we tie it in the front. Okay, now we tie it two times. Okay, the first time is we do it, okay, we do it tight. Look at that.
It's ripped.
It's ripped, okay. You see, that doesn't happen with the other Bechalis issue at the best in it. Okay. Wow. That's a very musical bit of chalitza shoe.
You saw history in the making.
So, this shoe and that is, a surprise. All right. And then the second one is a little bit lighter. And then we do a bow. And then kibbutz.
Is this a typical shoelace bow?
What?
Is it a typical shoelace bow?
Yeah. A bow is a bow. What?
Watch, watch.
Okay, now.
He walks.
He leans against a pillar. Usually it's the wall. He leans against the pillar in such a way in which he's able to really stick his foot in the ground, very strongly in the ground, but in such a way where if you would remove the wall, if you bring in Jeff Rosengarten and have him remove the wall, I would still be standing. So he has to lean on the wall in such a way that even if the wall would be removed, the pillar would be removed, it would still be standing. And then the Yavama comes along. Now remember, this is after the initial psukim have been said, in which she has said, Yavmila, Kim Shebe, Yisrael, I didn't mention, it's important she says those last three words quickly. Because it can't be lo avayami, because then it sounds like he wants to. It says lo kapasi lekachta, which also the three have to be together, because otherwise it might sound like lo kapasi lekachta. You know, so therefore it's lo kapasi lekachta with the mafike, okay? And now we're up to this part of the procedure, so who is playing the Yavama? In terms of volunteering. Okay, Yaakov. Let's see. Jack of all trades.
Yes.
Okay.
So fair.
All right, so now this is the thing. Now, the procedure is supposed to be performed with the right hand, okay? But you also have to lift up the shoe. So the way that this is done is that first you undo the clasps, okay? The bottom one, I'll tell you what we do in the best, and we explain the whole procedure before she does anything. So everyone understands, she understands. You, with your right hand, and without bending down to the ground, undo the bottom clasp, the middle clasp, and then the top clasp. Actually, let me reverse that. First, you undo the straps. So you untie the straps. That's the double knot of the bow. You untie that. And then after that, you take off the bottom clasp, and then the middle clasp, and then at the top clasp.
All the right hand.
Right? Then with your, kind of in the reverse order in which, you know, it was put on. And then with your left hand, you lift up not the shoe, but the back of the foot. Okay, so you're able to lift up the foot, which will enable you to have the leverage to take off the shoe with your right hand. Okay, and while your left hand, the women don't have any problems. Then while with your left hand, okay, you have lifted up the shoe in the air, you've lifted up the foot in the air, you then take off the shoe with your right hand. Okay, you got that?
Yeah, okay. Where does he put it? No lifting of anything before I
finish. No. First you untie the straps and then the clasps.
All with your right hand.
All with your right hand.
And bottom, with your right middle, hand. Top.
Bottom
then it's bottom, middle, top, and then you lift up at the foot with your left hand and take off the shoe with your right hand, and then what's very important is once you have the shoe, you throw it, okay? You have to throw it. I mean, it's supposed, like even Picasso is spoken about. You have to throw it, and our gentleman is to throw it in such a way that it shouldn't hit anybody. Okay? So that you throw it, we usually have a desk of some sort, and then we clear everybody away from the desk. We say, get away from the desk. And we have it or a table, and then you throw it underneath that desk or that table. Okay, you got that?
Over here, you'll just throw it.
Yeah. Okay.
Throw it down back.
I'm just telling you what we generally do. Okay.
When you pick up a toy.
When
you pick up the foot
from
the
left,
from right on top of the left. The left hand will touch your skin.
The left hand will touch the skin. That's correct.
Just above the shoe.
The left hand lifts the foot. And the right hand takes off the shoe.
Okay, good. Let's go. Yeah, go to it.
Okay. Wait, I'm going to
go. He's doing right. He's doing exactly right.
Very good.
Just unravel the straps. Just unravel. That's it. Perfect job. Keep unraveling. Keep going.
Is there anything to
catch it? Shh. Oh, watch. Tell him. Just close. Sorry. This is perfect. He's good. It's completely unraveled, that's it. Now the bottom one first. Watch this. Top, middle, top. It's good. Now here's the most important part. Watch it. The left hand.
Out. With your left hand, you'll lift up. Now, not with your left hand.
The left
hand. Okay, your left hand. From the back of my foot, you lift up the back of the foot.
That's
yes.
Right.
Lift up the back of the foot, and I'm not helping you. So.
That's
ooh,
it.
Okay.
Throw it.
All right. Very good.
Well done, Yaakov.
Okay.
Excellent. Jaco was really very good.
And then, what we have is...
We haven't learned that part yet. Okay. It's supposed to be today's Shia, but I'm not sure. Or at least more than... His office only gave me half an hour. I want you to know that.
Oh.
Sharon said half an hour. Yeah,
so I have an appointment at 2, but I have 5 minutes. So then after that takes place, and then comes what we call the expectoration, okay, which is the spitting, since we are kabif enough. So this is very, very important, because she has to spit. She has to spit in the presence, okay, of the oven, so she has to face the oven. Yes, she doesn't spit, you know, directly so that it should hit the oven, but it has to be in the direction of the oven. So she's facing the oven and she spits. And one of the things that we do the day before the chalitza is to tell her not to eat or drink anything the day of the chalitza, so this spit should be pure phlegm. It's not allowed to be mixed with anything else. It can't be mixed with food. It can't be mixed with blood. It's not supposed to be mixed with anything else. It has to be pure phlegm. So therefore, we have her not even rinse her mouth, brush her teeth, use a mouthwash. The day of the chalitza, it's one of the reasons why a chalitza should be done early in the morning, since you don't have to fast for too long.
The World Trade Center was in the afternoon.
She can't.
Couldn't help.
It was sort of maybe like around noon, if I recall
correctly. Right,
around
noon, right. Couldn't help. That's the latest you've ever done.
But you try to have a fast, obviously, as little as possible. And then, in the presence of everybody, she expectorates. And that goes on the ground. And then you have the final statement. I think I have the chalitza script here somewhere, in which she says... and this is, of course, the one part in which, and then she says basically three times herself, and this is the part where everybody's kind of like been standing there waiting to participate, finally get their big chance, but then everybody all together says, and then, you know, it's essentially over. We just add a Yehi Ratzon at the end, which we say, Yehi Ratzon Shlotzavano Benosi Solo Dei Chalitza Loi Dei Yibum, that we make a prayer that this is not something that that we hope to ever have to do. Because ideally people should live long lives, they should have children, there shouldn't be a necessity to do either Yibum or Chalitza. Therefore we say that we make a Yehi Ratzon, that this should only be a theoretical discussion and not an actual practical one. And then there's a little bracha that says that without Shem Malchus, that there's a medrash that says that in the schusa that Avraham Avinu said that Sukkot Sochnal, he's not going to take from the Melech Sodom, that he was rewarded for the saying that he's not going to take Sochnal, that he was awarded with the mitzvah of Chalitza. Our Gemara has he was awarded the mitzvah of Tefillin, but there's a medrash that says he was rewarded with the mitzvah of Chalitza. So therefore, we make reference to Avraham Avinu. We say, and that's essentially the end of the chalitza ceremony. But then afterwards, what the woman receives, what we write out, is a shtar that memorializes the fact that the chalitza took place, and she's therefore free to remarry anybody that she wants, except, of course, a kohen. A chalitza is not allowed to marry a kohen. And that shtar is given over to her. The one other thing that I didn't mention in my presentation, but it's extremely important, I said that one of the most important aspects of what we discuss is that she has to be the one who does the full action of taking off the shoe. The other very important thing is that they have kavanah, that they both have to have kavanah, that this chalitza is going to be matzah ha-lashuk, she's going to be permitted lashuk, and it's going to sever all ties, the zika basically, that exists between them. Yes? Yeah, she's a lefty, so you just flip the order. The criteria determining that she's a lefty are a little bit different when it comes to chalitza than with respect to certain other halachas, but if she's determined to be a bona fide lefty, then you flip the order and she takes off the straps and the clasps and the shoe with her left hand, and she lifts up the back of the foot with her right hand. Yes.
Saliva and phlegm, two different things.
No, I don't think so. I mean, if they are, we know.
Rabbi Luis, when he said phlegm, he meant saliva, but he meant as opposed to a saliva which has to be the blood or mouthwash or toothpaste.
I'm using the lashon as articulated by our by Rav Melech Schechter, who I believe was the one who wrote up the chalitza script.
But I think
Mr.
Lichtman's point is very well taken. We should maybe think of revising that.
Maybe not. No, I'm sorry. It's my mistake. It's saliva and not phlegm. I revised it for purposes of the tape. Gather the saliva in your mouth in a natural manner, not raising phlegm. I'm mixing up the terminology. You're absolutely right. My mistake. When I said phlegm, I meant saliva, and it should not be mixed with anything else, to the extent of phlegm, whatever that means, is a foreign substance that should not be mixed together with saliva. It should be pure, unadulterated saliva. Thank you very much for that correction. I appreciate it. Yes.
Yeah. You know what I want to know is, in these kinds of ceremonies, and typically there's moments of
that are predictable moments of the intense emotion, like a bikura. By the chalitza, is there certain moments that you anticipate intense emotion, and in your preparation, the best preparation to sort of kind of, and you know, do something to sort of the parties anticipate they don't get blindsided?
Okay, so a lot of this, you know, any kind of procedure is done in Bezdin, it's very important to recognize the pastoral side of it. Because these are people, especially who talk about the World Trade Center situation, people have gone through enormous, immense tragedy. So much of what you have to do is to provide a soft and understanding and compassionate touch, you know, for the parties who put it inside. And to meet with them ahead of time. We speak to them ahead of time, we meet with them ahead of time. Whenever a chalitza is done at the Beis Din, there's at least a half hour before the chalitza begins, in which we're sitting down and talking to the parties about the procedure, talking about the situation, talking about what they should expect, telling them about the more, you know, difficult parts of the ceremony, you know, sympathizing with the discomfort of having to reveal the foot, as the case may be, of having to spit in public, as the case may be. So it's extremely important to be sensitive to just how traumatic an experience it might be if things are not explained correctly. If things are explained correctly, then I think that parties really appreciate the experience, provides a certain type of closure, finality, even a certain sense of the beauty of the chesed that's being performed by the brother-in-law, very much in the footsteps of Avraham Avinu, the same way that he provided a chesed below when he saved him from the four malachim and didn't even take anything in return. It was a completely unselfish act, so I explained so to here. This is a very unselfish act. As uncomfortable and as difficult as it may be, and I think the parties appreciate that pastoral touch, which is really not just pastoral, but part and parcel of what the chalitza procedure is all about.
But what are the points where people, if they get...
It can happen at any time.
Really?
Yes.
It's not like a...
Yeah.
It could happen at any time, and that's, you know, true in all, you know, types of situations.
If it's okay with you, we're going to hold on to one copy of this so people can look it up.
100%.
So you took two, so you can hold on to one.
Yes.
Abbas will have it on my desk tomorrow, so you can look and see the full script, the text. And we want to thank Avi Reese very much for staying a whole hour with us, which is twice as much part of the kefil ashira that we have nowadays. So.
Yes. Baruch Hashem.
This is all yours.
Okay. All right,
so
very good.
Thank you very, very much.
All the best.
Okay, go ahead. I'll bring it out the bed. Yes. Any questions you have now, please feel free.
Why is there no bracha?
Good question. Why is there no bracha? When a get is given, it's also no bracha. It's the Rashbam discusses that question when it comes to a get. Some of his logic may apply here as well. It's not everything that we do in life has a bracha. And not the same as Kiddush. We'll leave it at that. Yes?
Two questions. Why does the shoe go underneath the desk? Is there
specific reason? No, really.
Also, let's say the case you mentioned where the woman said that she did have children but not the man, or not that, and then she gets married with somebody else.
You mean that mistaken case that you described?
Yeah. So what?
And have a child?
Yeah. What's the status of the child? Because we know that she's not mutter l'shug during that period.
The machlokes in the Gemara, what the status of that child is. Some say the child's a mamza, because there is some measure of marriage or quasi-marriage between him and her, and then this child from another man. And the halacha we see differently. Look at the Naftali base.
Moshe said like she could.
But there are two different issues. One is the status of the child. A second issue is may they remain together. Because if you, now since we're discussing, I was asked today by the Sky Mashkia, what are we doing in June's month? So I did my schedule today. I found out that the last year is in 3 weeks. Is that what it is? May 9th. Can you show me how many weeks is that from today? And that's the last year. The Bechin is on May 10th, which is Lag BaOmer. So get your bow and arrow and your, don't shoot me. I mean, don't take out your frustration. So according to my, let's quick calculation, let's see. Whoa, what's that, 2 weeks? Oh my goodness, it's only 2 weeks. Oh, how am I going to fit that? Oh, I'm just crossed up now, I thought I missed this. And then I'm going to resume shiur, as was mentioned yesterday, the June's man, I think it's the 29th, which is right after Shavuos. And I think the most logical thing for us to do is the end of Yevamos, which is the Vagunas, which is we haven't even touched, as I told you from the beginning, we probably won't get to it. And part of that is the sugya on that Pei Zayin that we pray called Yisha Rabbah, and that's actually brought up in the Tosefta, which talks about Cheresh Adavikot. That's in the sugya that we're doing right now. That comes up. If you look at the Makaris, Teitzim Mizeh Mizeh comes up. So that is certainly where Moshe was wrestling with in this kind of a case. Yes, sir?
Is the Na'al put on before the Kriya, before everything?
Yes.
If it's not, then is that a problem?
No, well, look, we have the script. Well, the script, I don't want to speak out of turn, but everything is scripted, as we said before. It gives you the entire script. Yes, this question, this question, this question, this question, this question. Okay? So what happens? So let me get this straight. They give the entire, the shoe's already on. And then she says those magic words. He says the magic words. Then he says, press your foot on the floor. Remain passive. This is the instructions. And do not assist your brother's wife when she unties the shoe, nor when she raises your foot and removes the shoe. And then he goes, tells what to do. Okay? Yes, sir.
According to Moshe's perspective, that she can live with him if it was a mistake in the
Pesach. Yeah.
What, does that mean that they can continue having children?
Yes.
But what, the child that we said before?
No, they're chalitza. They do a chalitza now. Chalitza done after they're ready together. I don't want to make any statement, but that's going to be, I want to come in June, coming attractions. But that seriously, that's not part of art, it's part of the issue. It's really part of the subsequent dapim, Isha Rabba, which will lead to the syllabus of the June Tvam B'Tziyat, the Shmaya B'Lineva. Yes, Ben.
So, what everyone's talking about. So, the Rosh Manfarish, I forget who says it, that there needs to be Marina's Babal, right? So, if she made a mistake, if she didn't know the halacha, and she said, right, that, yeah, we had children, not knowing that it needed to be from him, right? So, there was no Marina's Babal, really. So, she shouldn't be usher to the.
That you're talking about the Marik. The Marik,
like
very good. The Marik said that, but we assume, generally speaking, not that way. That's that Mishnah too. I don't know if it'll be in June, but if you have to get the tapes, we'll talk about that a little bit.
Is there anything of
Pesach
in terms of between the various
days? Like, no. We don't go walk, we don't start the davening mincha between, but we try to go one after the other, but this is something, an emergency, it's a phone call, and who knows what, we're not passing. Okay? Also, we have 20-something minutes to go. You have a question?
If you have to do chalitza on both feet, does the yom sit down?
The question is, Rabbi Reese assumed, like the Beis Yosef, you do both of them at once. We never had the case, but I think most people follow the Bach. You do one after the other. So at least we saw that machlok. Rabbi, before I even start with today, what I call today's shir, I have a number of comments. And let's just start these comments. One of them, I put them in a certain order for myself, and then we'll cover as much as we can. And tomorrow's shiur is at 11 o'clock, of the regular shiur. And I know tomorrow is also Yom HaTzmut. We'll talk about that at the end of the shiur. So okay, fine. Comment number one, Rabosai, for today's shiur is as follows. We left off in the middle of what we call the issue. We spoke about it a while ago. You have to have him, you have to have her. Can it be a shaliach? So, of course, he can't appoint a shaliach, that's for sure. What about her? So I mentioned to you that a certain rabbi wanted to be matur. I didn't even know his name, and then all the rabbanim came out against it. So I looked in the sefer Chalitza Kehilchasa, which obviously is a good sefer, Rabbi Reese referred to it numerous times, and I found that he discussed, and he gives away the name. These things are usually put into oblivion. I'm going to tell you the name of the person who suggested this remarkable heter. And I'm going to read it to you from this sefer. Okay. And what's fascinating, this is in quotes in Aruch HaNer. I mentioned it once when he spoke with us to remind me, look at Aruch HaNer. You didn't remind me, but he tells what the Aruch HaNer says. If you want to look up in this sefer, it's in the Perek Yud Zayin, which is the opening parak. This is called Chelik Beis. Start to parak Yizayin, the opening parak in this Chelik. In Ha'orah Samach Aleph and Beis, he discusses that the Aruch HaNeh quotes an Aruch Zeruah who gives two reasons why there can be no Shlichus. One reason is we compare Chalitza to Yibum. Obviously, Yibum is no Shlich. Everyone understands that. So to Chalitza. But the second is because it's V'cholza Nalo Me'al Raglo. Ah, but if that's the reason, asks the Aruch HaNeh, Daf Kufayim and Aleph, so why can't she appoint a shliach to perform the act of chalitza? That's the question that the Aruch HaNer raises. He's assuming as a davar poshut that she in fact cannot do such a thing. So the Avnei Nezer said it's based upon a pasuk, v'nigsha yevimto le'enei askenu v'cholza, which means she has to calm herself in front of the eyes of the Bezdim. No shlichas would be possible based on that pasuk. And he brings a raya from a Mishnah Sanhedrin Daf Yud Ches that Eishes HaMelech, there's no chalitza because it's a little bit degrading. The grain of the cover of the melech. Let us in a shliach. The fact that there's no, that indicates, that point the fact there is no shliachs. Okay. Who was this rabbi? He must have been a Talmud Chacham. It wasn't against Shas. Who was his name? It's on page Nun Beis of this volume, if you want to look. This is volume 2. Nun Beis. Sefer Yad Shlomo, Lahagoyin Rav Shlomo Dayan, Sherotza Lachadish, We mentioned this, remember? In the context of the Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah said there could be no shlichus, therefore, remember the whole discussion? God alone al Gabov, not for him, not for her. That's what we saw in that footnote on the Rashi, I mentioned yesterday, the day before, quoted from the Maharsham. This is the Maharsham he quotes as well. And then he quotes the next footnote. The Maharsham said, Yad Shlomo, from Shlomo dying, Shasat Chak, maybe it should be Mekel, but Lo Malol, Libo Lahokel, Rak Maskamas Gedole Torah V'Yira, and the Chidush Arim said, forget it, right? But to get an impression that the Marsham doesn't close the door in the Shasat Chak and Egan Mokum Shesho Talokel, maybe there's some coolest, but the Avnei Nezer, who's a contemporary, says, forget about it. The same Shasat the Marsham got, said, forget about it. Chelkas Yov at the same time, forget about it. Said there was certain Rabbanim want to be matrik, and it's wrong. It's wrong for the same as the and the Marasham Hodolach Hakach Shetov Ipsak Shalom. Get him with the Marasham, who's the God of Ador, wanted to suggest in the Shasat Chak that maybe there's room to be Mekel, but he backed out. Now, the Yodua Shaya Ezerav, he doesn't mention his name, this is Chelkas Yov speaking. Zero. Wow. So the Marsham himself was a little bit on the fence. And everyone else said no. And this Rav Shlomo Dayan said yes. I'm not sure if it's the same Rav or some other Rav that he's referring to. It's fascinating, huh? History. This all happened 100 years ago. That's when it all happened. So, Rabosa. Okay, Rav Dovid Kalina, I think, Shulim, Chavlim Kromim, he didn't like it either. Okay, but the Marsham didn't close the door. Okay, number one. Number two, I wanted to show a Mitzvah Esa. Mitzvah Esa. Daf Kuf Dal in the back. Let's see our opening Gemaras, please. We had a question, if you recall, the famous question. The Gemara speaks about Chere Shota V'Kotten, Lav B'nei Kriya. Why don't you say the Lav B'nei Deyah? So I wanted to show you that the Mitzvah Esav addresses this question. Take a look over here. It's in Kovas Mepharshim. Okay? It's the last piece on page Mem Zayin. If you have Yalkut Mepharshim that I have in the back, okay? The same as she came in as a chareshes, she goes out of chareshes. Pirish, the tapuk miyavam birimiza kishem. Top of page Mem Ches. Kishem Shekinsa Habal. The word remiza means that a cheresh is only able to give a remiza. That's such great das. V'isa the time of the cheresh and a choles u'mishum. The lav ben deyu. Tikshi. The hotelach v'pikeach v'nischaresh. Fine. Abo v'cheresh me'ekoro ma'ich maslon. The lav ben deyu. Hash the b'shas chalitza. Holo. B'shas chalitza. Holo odif mi get. The Bina Data, the Baal, the Kaimalam, Dim kines beremiza, mosi beremiza. The concept of a kiddushay cheresh or the get cheresh. Our best once had a case of a get cheresh, where we assume it's good. You know, kibola kach poltoch. May I use that expression? I hope it's not too irreverent. But he came in with a minimal das. Go on, minimal das. The al kochoch shani chalitza the cheresh eno cholitz. Mishum de eno ba'amira. U'mishamachil o'mahanim na'ashakines k'shohaya gam ken cheresh. Dimikom ha'gom binan achshav amira. Avshakines b'ramiza mitzvesa. A very nice answer. We had a whole discussion about the answer to this question. About Tosis' answer, about the oldest answer. We had a ritva, we had a Rambam. We had so many different answers. And he gives his own answer. Fascinating. Fascinating. Interesting. The assumption over here is that lav b'nei deah is the regular day, as opposed to shita sarambam, that b'nei deah means there for the kriya, which is a higher level. And it's interesting, as in the same sefer chalitza gilchasa, he quotes a sefer called the meleches chorosh. That's how I pronounce it, based on the pasuk and chumash, but it's really a play on words, all about cheresh. They open the school where they can teach individuals who cannot hear and cannot speak to be intelligent, to understand, for sign language, as the case may be. What's the din? The Rosh Hashanah, he talks about it. In Gittin, in Vienna, Ira Bira Vina, there's a school. But what do you do now? Is he considered a cheresh, the la bar das, or not? This is not our topic for this year. We learn Gittin. Every year we go, we learn Gittin a few times. I went through this Indian barichus. Not going to discuss it now, but I wanted to bring it to your attention. It is a very important halakha question. Today, a person can neither speak nor hear, but he has intelligence. What is his halakhic status? And we shall see in a moment that's relevant to the next point. I mentioned the Ramban a few times, and I didn't have a chance to read the Ramban because I couldn't even find one, but thanks to Shlomo, I have the best edition of the Ramban. The Hirschl's edition, this is the black version, which is the best. I'm going to read you a few words out of the Ramban here on our daf in the Skidushim, which are very critical. We have brief citations, but here on our daf, he has the same kasha about God alone and Al-Gaba, into this nation. Look what he writes. A cheresh has mixes kavana, p'shacheron de magabav. For the Tanya hochat shiskavnu shneim, as Rabbi Risha said, you need kavana. Lafuke chalutz lo chalutz of the kachat of konsa of chayotzibah. We think we plan to marry her with the chalitza. Avon neskavin lo hotzia mimenu b'chalitza zu. Hayim a kavana, it's good enough. Watch this, here's the key line. V'cheresh yochol hu lechavin kavana zu b'rmiza. The cheresh can muster this level of kavana, the data kalishta isle, he has some weak das. He has some weak das. What about get? What about get? He said, you know what? Ksivas get lishma kol usagi. And I read you the word. Kloma, ain't sorak she is kavin lahotzia, ela she yichtov also amanas liten also leplonis. Exactly the same word is used in both cases. Lahotzia. Lahotzia bachalitza is, it's good. Lotzia beget is no good. You'll ask the question, why Lot? Yes, Ben.
I thought we said that he doesn't need kavana. I thought we said that you'd be able to trick him
in. That's Kuvah, we'll get to it. We're down to 2 weeks. We'll have to pick up the pace somehow. We'll get to it. We have one blot left, right? These Maramakomas go just almost to the end of Kuvah. We only have one more daf to go. So, Blineta, we'll get there. Siyata Deshmai, with your help and cooperation, we'll try to, Blineta, finish the syllabus, if you will. Okay? So he uses the word lahotzia in both contexts. It works for chalitz, not forget. Why? Doesn't tell you why. Just assumes it. Doesn't tell you why. So I thought, goes back to Rabbi Chanan's words. Rabbi Chanan said with respect to God alone and Al-Gabav, that chalitza, you're not doing, you're not really releasing her. The Torah releases her. You just do the action. Get, you release her. Doesn't have enough, that much knowledge he doesn't have. That's what I'm suggesting, shouting this in this Ramban. My name Kamina. What we call today a pesi. What's a pesi? Shomer psorim Hashem. What's a pesi? A simpleton. It means that someone, he's not a cheresh. He just has his intelligence, a very low intelligence. So the Marit says, very low intelligent, it's good enough. Why? So then they say, the chalitza got to suggest, even if it wouldn't be good enough for a get, good enough for chalitza based upon this Ramban. I want to bring it to your attention. Even a low level intelligence, you're not mamash acherish. Obviously, if you're so low, you may have the concern of a shota. Although shota proper is not someone who has less intelligence, he's just deranged. lesson tell, and this is very relevant, you know, all kinds of issues today, Down syndrome and other, you know, syndromes that exist out there, and spectrums as they call it today. So what's the halachic status? It's very, very critical in these areas of halacha if it should ever come to pass. Okay, one more preliminary remark before I start the shiur. Okay, and that is as follows. I'm sorry to say, and I picked it up in the today's Chalitza Kilchasa, that the Rashash that we got so excited about is not accepted by anybody else. The Rashash said something, and we wanted to suggest that Bisman Azeh, that everybody is literate, this yesterday, the day before. So the Rashash's last backing out wouldn't apply, and we could say, Hoyo Rashash Sakosh like by Asaris. The problem is against an offer in the Gemara. So it would seem. Kuf Yud Amad Aleph. It's not my kasha, it's Sri Deyesh as the kasha. As this Rashash is against the Gemara. What the Gemara? Kuf Yud Amad Aleph. Take a look at Kuf Yud Amad Aleph, Rabbi Osai. Kuf Yud Amad Aleph. Says the Gemara, Kuf Yud Amad Aleph. Okay? The first wide line, the Babin Zav. Pikachas Liachakach Nischarsha Lo. Can't do it. Why? The Ma'akva Bokriya. On a simple level, the Mefurish Gemara against the Rashash. The fact that she at one point was able to hear, and now she can no longer hear, so then it's no good. Now, of course, you'll say that may be for a different reason, but the Gemara says the Ma'akva Bokriya. The Gemara doesn't say because of the lack of Das, it's the lack of Kriya. So the Sri Yesh says the only time we say that Shasta Kosha helps is the case of a Saris. What's the chesaron of Saris? There's no Zika. There's no Zika. There's no connection. So there we say, as long as it was once capable, so the connection exists. But when it comes to a situation such as this, Rabbi Osai, in which there is a technical shortcoming, you're not able to speak or you're not able to hear, which is equivalent to not able to speak, then we say that Shasa Kosher is irrelevant, not going to help. Ad kan Sridayesh. Okay? Now, Rabbi Osai, we start today's shiur. This is about the end of the shiur. We start today's shiur. Today's shiur is supposed to start, if you recall, by finishing the Oneg Yontif. That's Chazar, what the Oneg Yontif said, and then we'll just add another little line, and then we'll come off the... I didn't even get to the first line. We'll do the first line of the Makaros. That's as far as we got. The first line. There shouldn't be the total for naught. First line we'll get to. We met it in the limited time that we have. What the Oneg Yontif said, let's remind ourselves what he said. The Gemara is the Beferish over here. Black on white Gemara, and of Kufhei Omer Al. What's the difference between Rikika and Kriya? So the Gemara explains on a purely technical basis. What does the Gemara say? The Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says, Kriya disa ben betchila ben besof lo michlefale. Rikika de betchila lesa lo besof isa michlefale. Vasa le mishri chalutza liach. We understood it, as I told you yesterday in my language, Rashi understood it, on a purely balabatisha level. A person to see this happen and see that somebody then later marry the brother, they'll think, there must have been a previous chalitza before. So a chalitza can then marry Janisa Daraisa, presumably, of Kemish Laban of Shuvla Yivet. That's the problem. Good. But Kriya can even exist before. Ask the Oneg Yontif, and what'll happen if there's a Kriya of afterwards? The Kriya of afterwards, we heard the three different Kriyas, right? Two of his, two of hers, and one of his. Her last one is the Kriya afterwards. So the Kriya afterwards should pass on the same grounds? True, there's a Kriya before. Depends what she said. So she'll say the later Pasuk, then we're going to pass. We don't find anything like that. That's his Kasha against Rashi. So the Rambam learns of a Tifavart, a Lom de Shavar Abosai. This idea, listen carefully, this idea of less of a soul for Yisra of a soul is not what I call in our language a Siba, as Rashi understood it, but it's a Simen. It's a simen that the rekika, the fact that it comes at the only at the end, not before, that's a part of the actual matir. And therefore, Rabbi Osai, they made a gzeira on the rekika which precedes the chalitza, which of course is not a matir. Otu, a rekika which comes after the chalitza, which in fact is a matir. People get mixed up one matir with another matir. Right? Because they're both matirin. Right? And then they're going to say, if Rikika is a matir, Chalita is a matir, so the same way as after the matir of Rikika, she can marry the brother, so too after the Chalita. But they're not going to learn from Korea, which is not a matir at all. So it's a more of a lumdish kind of exera that assumes a certain intelligence level. Fine. Now, what led the Rambam to this? I'll give you the last, only have 5 minutes. The Onig Yontes has a final, wow, a little last, the last blast, based on the Taptosis. Kocha Yosar, Dovashu Maisa Maka, Vim Tomar, Uleman Diomar, the Akimas Piv, Have Maisa, a Sugin Sanhedrin, Heichim Matina and Kriya. What a good kash. So you have two territories which they only got to call the Docha. What's the answer? Become a go maisa garuo. No sinner kika. That's a small action. Inami, lodomi lemanig bekol shu maisa godo. One of the cases there is a person, lo sachsam shor bedisho, so he whistles to the shor to come and thresh. That's considered to be a maisa godo. Fine. So he said that's like a dochak answers. Dochak answers. The answer really is, Alagamar goes to quantum Rabbi Akiva. Right, we know Rabbi Akiva said, Rabbi Akiva, we spoke about. Comes there only on with the Bekias. Rabbi Akiva holds Rabbi Osai that Megadev is Chai of Chatas, and a Dibur is considered to be a Maise, even though Rabbi Osai, it's Ikro Belave. Blasphemy. The person says words, doesn't know what the words mean. It's not really, can't call it a blasphemy, it's just parroting something that doesn't know what the words mean. Ikro Belave. For us, Rabbi Osai, we passed it against Rabbi Akiva in that respect. It's not considered to be a Maisa when it's Ikro Belev, such as Kriyas Chalitza. Kriyas Chalitza, what's the fundamental point of Kriya of the Chalitza? To spell out with your mouth what you're thinking in your heart. It's exactly what the Rambam is saying. As a whole reason to come to that remarkable conclusion. This is what the Onig Yontes says. You can look it up. I don't have time to put it on the screen right now. Oh, but now that we've said this, Rabbi Osai, just to give you a one more nakuda, just to start the sugya we're supposed to start today, and that is the Rosh Siman Yud Beis. Just so you have another 2 minutes to the second line of the Bekaris, the Rosh Siman Yud Beis. We already heard today from Rabbi Reed Shlita about what has to come out of the mouth. Shokle Avu L'Shmuel Yivama Sharaka Kodan Tachlos. Why is the last line in our daf? Sheyev Sholidam below Tzachtzuche Harok. Whoa, Rabbi Osai, doesn't sound like that's what it says on top. On top it says Miksiv Sharaka Korok. On the bottom it says whenever it is down there is rope. Are the two? How do you square the two Gemaras? You follow me? So Rashi puts them together. Rashi says the top of the Gemara says Roka Korok. What it really means is the Gemara on the bottom of whenever it is down is also Rok. Says the Rosh, top line of page Nunches in our print. Dafka b'mot tzetzes, which means she spits. Ava b'shos, is it drips? Lo. If it drips, no. If it drips, no. Wow. Vanika Safdi, look at the Tosas of Rosh. The Hanu de Be Midrasha, the army Biksiv Yerok of Rok, Sabre da Filu Show says, the low boy Tzichsuche Yerok. Rabbi says it's a machlok, it's the top and the bottom of the Sugya. Can cause the Varaibidzal. The time of the Mistabahu, the Rok Lok Siva Baraisa. He's saying you don't have to come on, if you will, to Tzichsuche Ziva. Don't need to tzuke rope, rather. Then he says, "Lo pligi adode hu deleil lo boy le tzuke rope kisharokka b'mokam chalitza the sagale b'hachi." And the brayse which requires tzuke rope, sharokka shelo b'mokam chalitza the le poslo min hayibum iiki tzuke rope who the poslo the gazim b'shemikiga the bas chalitza abal less tzuke rope. Lo gazrinon. You know why the Mishnah says the Korban Nisanel? It's a milsa de lo shchicha. So he's saying like this. So for it to be kosher, you don't need any rok. Miksiv rok or rok. But when it comes to the din of rekika being passed malachim, then and only then rok has to be there. Otherwise it's a milsa de lo shchicha. So says the Ravid. The Rosh quotes the Ravid very, very briefly, and we don't have the time to read it in its full form, so believe that tomorrow we'll pick up with the Sefer HaSchus, which is the Ravid himself, followed by the Ramban. Then we'll go through the Imara Makovitz, Lineta, to go as far as we can before talking about in Yonah Diyoma after the Shia's open. Then tomorrow at 1 o'clock is the Suda Soda, so that'll be subsequent. Okay.